Elijah Schaefer is a Blaze TV host of Slightly Offensive. And he's really not offensive. Well, he's slightly offensive. Actually, he's more than slightly offensive to those who believe in this Marxist world where we all have to bow down and genuflect. He's very offensive to those people, maybe slightly offensive to you. Welcome, Elijah. How are you?
I am doing great out here in the new country of Chaz, Seattle. Thank you for having me on, Glenn.
You bet. Are you, you're not actually staying there, are you? In that 6-block radius?
No, I'm not actually staying there. And thank God, because a friend that I'm staying with, who's also a journalist, was attacked. They tried to steal his property. And then they wanted to take him to an interrogation tent because they said he's trying to copy or capture their security plan. So it's divulging into a police state at night and then a hippie fest in the day.
What do you mean an interrogation tent?
That is a good question. I'm glad I don't know, but I know that multiple times they told me he needed to come with them, and they tried to forcibly take him. They assaulted him. This is one of Raz Simone's crew that was out there last night, the supposed leader, alleged leader of the area. I don't know if he's a good or a bad guy, but he definitely was assaulted. The police had to get involved, and he's just a journalist, not even partisan. He works for a nonpartisan editorial called Scriber News, so I don't know why he was a target of attack.
The leader of Chaz, they found some tweets in his past that shows that he's very anti-homosexual, or at least has made very crude remarks on Twitter about homosexuals. Is he gonna pay a price for that? Will he go to the interrogation camp? Do you know, or tent?
You know, he won't. And I think that brings up the weird paradox of the fight between Antifa and Black Lives Matter, where Raz Simone represents more of the Black Lives Matter protest, but Antifa, which are using an entirely organized police system with the John Brown Gun Club, which is also linked to a terrorist attack on an ICE facility, and they are tied in heavily with Antifa, essentially like an Antifa security group. I did go undercover, talk to one individual, and he in Black Bloc told me that he wasn't going to pursue these suspects any longer because that were infiltrating because they had left his region. So at least I know they have the place divided up into regions, and they have different personnel there monitoring, chasing, and there definitely are laws and rules. There's no First Amendment. They attacked a street preacher for sharing the gospel. When I asked them why they attacked him, they said because he was using the N-word and doing Nazi-style stuff. And I said, all I heard him do was preach the gospel. And they told him he was mentally ill. They said that his preaching was a sign of mental illness and he needed mental help. And then they picked him up, dragged him out, stole his speaker, his phone, and even at one point chokeholded him face down on the asphalt, very similar to George Floyd, which is ironic when you're protesting police brutality.
Yeah, I saw that finally somebody came up and said, what are you guys doing? You know, knowing that this was exactly what happened to George Floyd. Tell me about the distinction between three different groups. One, the diehards, the ones that are there in almost a military style operation, then those who are just kind of there, do they see what's really going on? And then the people who are living in that area or have a business in that area.
Yeah, that's a good question. So initially, the diehards are very serious. Last night, I was at a protest, and one of the women that was one of the, I guess, organizers berated me and yelled at me for not chanting loud enough. When I told her I was tired, she called me a B-I-T-C-H and said that she had, you know, been sleeping in the park as well, and that if I'm with them, I need to be louder. And I'm thinking, you know, she was mad at me because I wasn't loud enough at the protest, chanting with them. So there's a lot of control and pressure there. And they demanded that everyone show up at the West Precinct at a certain time. And it's very demanding. And they also talked about the French Revolution and their new name, Chopped. And they referenced that, well, what happened to the people who didn't get on board with the last revolution in France? They got, and everyone yelled out, they got chopped. So So they ain't business. The people that are just staying around, they're like tourists. There's a lot of drugs. One individual handed me a giant handful of magic mushrooms when I came in. And no, I did not buy drugs, not incriminating myself. I went ahead and cast them into the partially dried up lake. So there's that crowd. They have no idea what's going on. There was a couple overdoses and issues yesterday. One man was taken out. Another was psychotic in the street with her shirt off and had to be taken away out as well. But then the businesses, Daily Beast says the businesses are on board, but I don't know if they're on board. I can tell you they're boarded up. They're not open. And as a business owner myself, and you know, and a lot of people know, if your business is boarded up and making zero revenue, it's difficult to be on board. Daily Beast said they're on board because they're passing out granola bars. But really, I'll leave you with this. I've noticed that, like the blood on the doorposts during the 10th plague, where the angel of death passed over when it saw the blood on the doors of the Hebrews, businesses are decorating their windows with rainbow flags and Black Lives Matter, say their names, all the quotes. And the ones that have their windows covered in the quotes don't have broken glass, and they're saved. And so you have to kind of show and prove that you're with, you're with the movement to avoid the angel of death destroying your business. And it's really, really, really heavy to see. One business in the area, the bathroom's code is 1312. That's still open. And that's ACAB, which is all cops are BASTARDS. So even the businesses are getting on board with the venue just to continue to, I guess, right outside of the zone to avoid attack.
It's unbelievable, Elijah. I mean, what you're describing sounds very much like Nazi Germany in the early 30s and Kristallnacht. I mean, your store was marked to be destroyed because you were a Jew. What's the difference between that and you won't bow down to Black Lives Matter? It's a frightening time. Please stay safe. Elijah, please stay safe. So let me start with this. A frustrated police officer sent this in to me. Who's going to fight for us? Politics and policing have gone hand in hand for most of its existence, but enough is enough. I'm sick and tired of emotions controlling the narrative in policing. All data and facts have consistently debunked the idea of both systematic police misconduct and systematic racism. However, the Black Lives Matter movement and social left has created fear in truth speakers by calling people such things as racist, homophobic, xenophobic whenever they disagree. It pains me to watch, because they are making millions of dollars by holding down the very communities they claim to protect. Politicians have been allowing this to happen for too long, and it's time now for somebody just to stand up and simply say, no, you're wrong. We will do absolutely nothing you request because we are doing things the best we can. Evil is ugly. An adult molesting a 9-year-old child and then forcing them to masturbate on camera is ugly. Repeated domestic violence calls where significant others are beating, strangling, and killing victims are ugly. A mother stabbing her 11-year-old child 80 times is ugly. A father being murdered in front of his wife and daughters because he refused to let the suspect rape his children in front of him is ugly. Police or people breaking into a house in the middle of the night and shooting the homeowner is ugly. Being robbed at gunpoint is ugly. A shooting victim who is holding their infant child while they were shot is ugly. Homicides are ugly. Listen to victims tell the details of how they were raped is ugly. Business owners being too scared to go outside of their business because of drug dealers and other violence in high crime areas is ugly. When most people see evil and how ugly it is, they choose to record it on their cell phones in hopes of going viral on social media. But police officers choose to confront that evil. And evil is ugly. And that naturally makes police work ugly. Dead adults and dead children are ugly. Arrestees who have puked or defecated or urinated on themselves is ugly. Standing with family members and telling them not to retaliate when they just found out their child was raped is ugly. Applying first aid to trauma victims is ugly. Police work is ugly. But do you know what's worse than the ugliness of policing? The trauma of being raped as a child. The trauma of being robbed, burglarized, not feeling safe in your own home. The trauma of being shot. The trauma of going to work. The trauma of being a victim to all types of evil in society. Despite the ugliness of the streets, community policing is often thought of as pretty. Reading with children, having amnesty days for those with outstanding charges, coffee with a cop. But real community policing is aggressively fighting the evil that lurks in our society and preys on the weak. Real community policing is getting drug dealers, trigger pullers, robbers, burglars, rapists, larcenists, and all other types of evil off the streets. Unfortunately, real community policing is happening less and less because our departments nationwide are throwing their officers under the bus at the request of delusional citizens. Evil is ugly. That means fighting evil is ugly. Those who commit the evil acts, like those listed above, are inherently evil. Evil people know that they will be punished, and they don't walk up to a police officer and turn themselves in. Resistance leads to use of force. Use of force is ugly. Physical fighting in the middle of the street is ugly. Yes, tasing someone is ugly. OC spray is ugly. Canine bites are ugly. Chasing armed robbery suspects on foot is ugly. Vehicle pursuits are ugly. Being shot at is ugly. Having objects thrown at you is ugly. Having people yell at you while you're trying to focus on the immediate threat is ugly. Knowing you might have to sacrifice your safety by not using force for the safety of the innocent bystanders is ugly. God forbid using deadly force is ugly. Despite the ugliness of the evil that they're fighting, a police officer has a duty to viciously and aggressively hunt down the evil in their neighborhood because evil is ugly. Police officers volunteer to fight evil because no one else will. Police officers are constantly thinking through each action they take as a situation rapidly unfolds right in front of them. Police officers owe a duty to many people when they make these rapid decisions. Citizens and other officers, their safety, their department policies, the jurisdiction, the statutes, the suspect, constitutional violations. Due to the ugliness of the situation combined with the split-second decision-making, the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled that the use of force situations in question will be based on a reasonable officer's action with the information that was available at the time, not a reasonable civilian's action with 20/20 hindsight. Police work is ugly, and if you don't do the job, you're not trained in the ugliness of it, and the case law regarding it, you'll never understand the decisions being made on the ground. In fact, officers use force significantly less than they should, simply because they fear the repercussions of public perception and the many self-proclaimed social media warriors. It is way beyond time for police departments nationwide to quit catering to those who are not trained in the ugliness of policing and defend their officers. Wake up! Your heroes are not the people who are posting lies to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and are on CNN. Your actual heroes are very literally being killed in the streets fighting evil. Very few people are even aware that 97 police officers have been killed in the line of duty from January 1, 2020 to June 7, 2020. 97. What was it for police shootings of black Americans? 9. 3.5 million interactions with Americans, 3.5 million, 97 police officers have been killed. 9 blacks have been killed by police officers. 97-9. In sports, it would be, you know, especially with social justice sports, it would be the other side that would be calling for mercy. The only thing uglier than policing is in 2020 is the blind, emotionally charged support of the domestic terrorist group Black Lives Matter by millions of citizens and celebrities and businesses and politicians. The only injustice in modern society is the lack of a leader willing to stand up and speak the verifiable truth. Police are good. Who will be that leader? With urgency, police officers nationwide.
Across the country, police are resigning, and they're resigning in large numbers. We first saw it from a tweet from one reporter that in New York City, they were seeing about 6 resignations per day and many more people retiring. A bunch of rumors started swirling that people in Minneapolis on the police force would be resigning as well. But I got to tell you, man, I've got, I think, maybe 8 different stories of across the country cops resigning. Some of these are overtly cultural. One cop put out a video just saying, you know what, I'm done, I'm out, I don't want to be a cop anymore. And I said this would happen when they raided the 3rd precinct in Minneapolis. What cop would want to be seen wearing that uniform? We see the video of all the cops running out of the building. I'm sure many went home and immediately took those uniforms off. But some cops are resigning outright because they'll be accused of wrongdoing in circumstances where they maybe didn't even do anything wrong. In one instance, some cops said that there were a bunch of young men, mostly black, erratically driving a golf cart. When they tried to stop them and arrest them, a scuffle breaks out, and now they're being targeted, and they don't want to be involved with it. Now, they haven't given a legitimate reason as to why they resigned, but they still resigned. Now, what do you think comes next when there's no police? You may have seen my segment I did several days ago about something called the Murray Hill riots, where the police went on strike. I think this was in Toronto. And then for that day, it was utter bedlam. The craziest story from the day is that a taxi company went and burned down a rival limousine company. Now, look, man, we all want to live in this fantasy reality where police don't need to exist, but we're a massive country. We're a massive planet. We have a ton of people with conflicting interests, and many people will be opportunistic and they'll take advantage of it if there are no cops. I certainly think we can call for police reform, but abolishing the police, like what Minneapolis is doing, is outright nuts. So right now in Seattle, the police are worried, saying this is close to lawlessness as we've ever been. The police are unable to respond to cases like extreme crimes, violent crimes, robberies, and this is expected to get worse. Now we have this story from the Star Tribune. 7 Minneapolis police officers resign after George Floyd protests, citing lack of support from city leaders. And there's more to come. They say maybe a half dozen more are in the process of getting ready to leave the department. So you don't need to defund the police. All you need to do is demoralize and vilify them, and they'll just leave of their own volition. But yes, Minneapolis did also vote to defund their police. Let's read the story. Then I'm going to show you a bunch of other stories. But let's get real, man. Wait till I show you the comments from people from the CHAZ, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. There's a couple posts. My tent was robbed. My tires were slashed. Oh, no. Some dude, a preacher, got attacked, physically attacked. That's what life is like without police. Roving bands of angry mobs that have no idea how or why, but they just think, you know what? Justice. And they show up with a baseball bat. Let's read this first story. Before we do, head over to timcast.com/donate. If you'd like to support my work, there's many ways you can give. There's a P.O. box if you want to send some stuff. But the best thing you can do is share this video. Listen, most people in this country are for police reform. But right now, a crazy band of activists who are getting more and more press attention are saying abolish the police, abolish the courts. And that's not what people want. But the mainstream media isn't telling people what's actually going on because they've been playing partisan politics the entire time. Now, it's not all bad. The media does cover these things. I'm literally reading mainstream media sources, but I want to give you a bigger picture, including media, social media posts, to show you what's going on in this place to the best of my ability. If you want to help me, you can share this video because I have to compete with these big mainstream companies. Otherwise, just hit the like button, subscribe, the notification bell. You get it. Let's read the news. The Star Tribune reports at least 7 Minneapolis police officers have resigned from the department since widespread unrest began over the death of George Floyd last month. And more than half a dozen are in the process of leaving, according to department officials. The departures, an unusually large exodus, come amid a growing crisis for the state's largest police force. With a state human rights investigation underway, calls for defunding and even disbandment, except they actually already voted to do this. They say morale has sunk to new lows in recent weeks, say department insiders, as officers reported feeling misunderstood and squeezed by all sides, by the state probe, by protesters who hurled bricks and epithets their way, by city leaders who surrendered a police station that later burned on national television, and by the media. Numerous officers and protesters were injured in the rioting. An uncertain fate for police is likely driving a rash of resignations for those who examine the political climate and think to themselves, why should I stay? Say Milan Masson, a retired Minneapolis police officer and use of force expert. They don't feel appreciated. Everybody hates the police right now. I mean everybody. But those reactions are unlikely to generate much sympathy from social justice activists who pointed out the irony of officers' use of tear gas and rubber bullets on crowds protesting Floyd's death and past cases of brutality. City spokesperson Casper Hill confirmed that 7 officers have left the department but did not make information about them available. Although their demographics and individual motivations are unclear, several officers in exit interviews cited a lack of support from MPD leadership and City Hall as protests escalated, according to the insiders, who requested anonymity so they could speak freely. Another 7 officers are in the process of filing separation paperwork, and several others had to be talked out of leaving. In an email to supervisors earlier this month, a senior MPD official suggested that some officers had simply walked off the job in protest. During this busy and trying time, I have heard secondhand information that there have been employees that have advised their supervisors that they separated with the city or quit without completing paperwork. Deputy Chief Henry Halverson wrote in an email, while directing officers wishing to leave to contact the HR department, we need to have the process completed to ensure that we know who is continuing to work. Think about what that means. The police who have resigned and who are currently filling out paperwork, maybe 12 or 13, are not even all of the cops who have quit. They're saying straight up, many probably just left, never showed back up. And that's what I was saying. When they abandoned that police department, how many do you think just said, I am not going to be wearing this suit? When people are running around burning down police stations and they won't support you. In fact, they throw you under the bus. But it's not just Minneapolis. You may remember this tweet from 1 week ago. Oh, just over a week ago. John Cardillo says, NYPD source tells me on average 6 cops a day are resigning, and that number is expected to rise. That's in addition to normal attrition for retirement. This is disastrous for morale and manpower. How about this one? 2 Buffalo ERT members say resignation was not in solidarity with suspended officers. Now, this isn't an outright quitting of the force, but you had 57 emergency response team members quit that specific team because they felt like they were not being supported and were told the union would not back them up. Here's what they say. The officers we spoke with said the Buffalo Police Benevolent Association statement, asserting all 57 officers resigned from ERT in a show of support with the 2 officers that were suspended without pay, is not true. They said, we quit because our union said they aren't legally backing us anymore. So why would we stand on a line for the city with no legal backing if something were to happen? Has nothing to do with us supporting, said another. Wait, there's more. In Atlanta, we had a rather tragic event. A man lost his life. You may have seen the story. I talked about it earlier today. Well, this man was pulled over for falling asleep in his vehicle in a drive-thru. Let me tell you this story, okay? Now that I've actually had some time to look at some more of the footage, and I think I have a better assessment. This man was drunk in his car in Atlanta. This man, Mr. Brooks, I forgot his Rayshard, I believe his name was. He was drunk in his car and he fell asleep in the drive-thru of a Wendy's. People started driving around his vehicle. Someone called the cops. The cops showed up, tried to rouse him, and he dozed off in the drive-thru lane. They eventually got him to park his car. He got out. They gave him a field sobriety test. He failed. They talked with him. He said he would just go to sleep or just go home, but they said no breathalyzer because they found him in his car running. He failed the breathalyzer. They said they were going to arrest him for a DUI. He immediately fought back. He actually defeated the two police in the fight, stole one of their weapons, a taser, and started running. And as the cops are chasing after him, he turns to look behind him while running, aiming the weapon at the cop and firing. And then the police officer responds with 3 shots, killing Mr. Brooks. Many people are now trying to claim that this was over-the-top brutality. I'm sorry, it wasn't. You can't take a taser, which is a lethal weapon. They call it less lethal. Fire it at a cop and think they're not going to respond. But more importantly, you have no idea how you would respond to someone aiming a weapon at you. This is a guy who resisted. He was drunk. He was violent. He beat the two cops while they were trying to detain him and ran for it and then aimed a weapon and fired. I'm sorry. But what's crazy here is that the Atlanta police chief has resigned and they fired the cop. Once again, more resignations. Now, this one's a bit different from the other ones. But this shows you, man, the police, the departments across the country are under such intense pressure. Why wouldn't you think these cops are going to why would you think the cops would stay on for this? In this instance in Atlanta, it seems to be mostly a clear-cut case, a tragedy, unfortunate, but come on, man. Pointing a weapon at a cop that you stole from him and firing at him, I'm sorry, you might lose your life. And this guy didn't just die on the ground. He was brought to a hospital, went through surgery, and didn't make it. It's unfortunate. I wish nobody lost their lives, but don't fight with cops and steal their weapons and shoot at them. But now the chief has resigned? That's probably political, but insane. That this was not like George Floyd. And you know what, man? I'm sorry, but there's more. This story is probably one of the crazier stories. Entire South Florida SWAT team resigns after chief of police and local officials took a knee with protesters who called for investigation into Dawn raid, which killed a black man. Look, I understand that there are calls for reform. There's calls for abolish. There's calls to defund, disband, whatever. But the point is, the people working police departments are people. They're humans. Why would they stick their neck out with no legal protections? Now, maybe we need new cops. But I'll tell you what, man. When you look at Atlanta, I think we can see the seriousness of the problem. The cops in Atlanta were faced with a very serious threat. A drunk man who was driving drunk, who stole their weapon and was fleeing. What should they do? Do nothing? Let him go? Maybe we need some a change in how we approach people. Maybe it's better the guy got away, but he had a taser, man. And he fired at that cop and the cop reacted. It was a split second decision. And no, you would not react in all likelihood any differently because you don't know how you would react. I mean, maybe everybody thinks they know what would happen in a life or death situation. And what if this guy who had stolen his weapon, got him with a taser, incapacitated him, killed him with it, or used it to take his other weapons or vehicle or whatever? You don't know, man. You really don't. Story's unfortunate. But if you can't even have that, with body camera footage showing the guy was attacking you and firing up at you, and that's still not good enough, you still lose your job, why would any one of these cops stay on? Let's talk about what happens next, right? Check this out. Winchester officer resigns, says police face crusade against us in Facebook video. This guy didn't even do anything. This cop was just a regular old cop. Like, I quit. I'm out. I'm done. Later. There you go. Now it's not even about whether or not there was something they could be accused of. Like the other cops, you know, you got these two cops here in Ohio who say that they shouldn't have used tasers on some, you know, black tourists. And so they resign outright. That maybe there's an argument. But this other cop, he's just done. He's just gone. So let's talk about what you get next. Seattle Police Union Chief says his city is closest I've ever seen to being a lawless state. From Fox News. Seattle Police Officers Guild President Michael Solon told Outnumbered Overtime Friday, as close as ever seen to a lawless state. Solon called for local leaders to help restore order after anti-cop protesters declared a 6-block section of the city's Capitol Hill neighborhood to be an autonomous area and a cop-free zone. Now, I want to point out, people keep saying 6-block. What is it? A six block area? Or what are they saying? 6-block section? It's much bigger than that. What does that mean, a 6-block section? If you actually count each individual street, it's like 25. Now, it's you know, a rectangular shape, but it's not just 6 blocks. Like, if you walked in a straight line, 6 blocks. No, it's way bigger than that. way bigger than that. Maybe they're referring to the names of the streets and not the size of them. I don't know, man, but it's big. Solon told Harris Faulkner that legitimate issues of police brutality and racism had been stolen by unreasonable activists in the city of Seattle. And now they control six square blocks. There you go, square blocks. They control the precinct, and that is a direct result of our city elected officials lacking the political willpower to enforce the rule of law. And this is the closest I've ever seen our country, let alone the city here, to becoming a lawless state when public safety issues are deeply, deeply concerning. And if unreachable activists have taken over an East precinct voluntarily given up by an elected official's decisions, what's to stop them from taking another precinct? And West Precinct, where 300 protesters marched on two nights ago, where officers were ordered back inside, outside the perimeter. If we lose that flagship precinct that houses the 911 communication center, therefore, if that becomes disabled, how do we provide public safety services to the entire city? This is how serious this conversation is. I'm sorry. It's actually much more serious than that. It's not just fear of a lawless zone. Street preacher attacked in Seattle's autonomous zone. Stop choking me. They put him on the ground. They put him in a chokehold, apparently. Why? They didn't want some guy coming in with ideas? You want to talk about someone breaking a law and being stopped by a cop, and we will say the people shouldn't lose their lives. You want to talk about a preacher just walking down the street and you attack him? I'm sorry, that's even worse. But still, it's way worse. Seattle Police Chief, we are not able to get 911 calls for rape, robbery, and autonomous zone. That's right. The crimes that are committed in this place will be unsolved, will not be stopped. And you've already got people who have been assaulted, people walking around with guns, though legally. But some of these people walking around with guns are doing it to control, intimidate, and extort. You have robberies. And worse, the National Review says, the head of Seattle's police department told officers in a video address on Thursday that the decision to abandon the city's third precinct to activists was not my decision, and has prevented the department from responding to emergency calls in the Capitol Hill neighborhood. Police Chief Carmen Best, who joined Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan at a news conference Thursday afternoon, revealed that ultimately the city had other plans for the building and relented to public pressure. You should know, leaving the precinct was not my decision. You fought for days to protect it. I asked you to stand on that line day in and day out, to be pelted with projectiles, to be screamed at, threatened, and in some cases hurt. Then to have a change of course nearly 2 weeks in, it seems like an insult to you and our community. And now it's happening. You have people in the Chaz that, for the most part, they're LARPing. Like, let's be honest. But you do have crimes. And it's very much like Occupy Wall Street. Let me tell you about Occupy Wall Street. At Occupy, they didn't have borders. There were no armed individuals blocking entrance. You could walk in and out very easily for the most part. There were very serious crimes. And there were females who were assaulted in their tents by some males, if you know what I'm trying to say. The activists there said, don't report it to the police. We'll deal with it ourselves. Why? Well, the press will make us look bad if we report this, and that's what you can expect. Think about what that means as all of these police officers resign. What does that mean for your community police group? Let's say they disband the police in your neighborhood, and now you have a community group that's policing. Let's say there's some violent crimes that happen in your community. What do you think they're going to do? Do you think they'll immediately say, let's go get justice? Or do you think they'll say something like, hold on a second. If we report this crime, our property value might go down. Well, I don't want to lose my property value. The press will have a field day with this story if we report what happened. Just don't say anything. Don't report it. Just like we see at Occupy, just like we're now seeing at the Chaz. Why would a community group want the outside world to know that their neighborhood is unsafe? They don't want the value of their property to go down. So I see every incentive for them to cover up crimes and make sure no one gets justice. What if the person who commits the crime is related to somebody who's on the community board, the same as it could be with a cop? With the police, you have less people for a larger area. And besides, you know, to be honest, they talk about community policing. What they're really saying is that city policing doesn't work because they're too dense. Where I live, it very much is community policing. The police officers, I'm in a very, very small town. The cops, there are very few of them. And for the most part, they talk to you like normal people. You might see them out in the street. Now, we don't know everybody because they're still like, I don't know how many people, but it's in the tens of thousands. So this police department can't know everyone, but they're part of the community. They go to the same churches as many other people. They go to the same community centers. They go to the same parks. So yeah, in New York, that's arguably true, in Los Angeles or Chicago. But these cities are so massive, there's just no way they're going to have ties to the community in the same way. So what do you propose the change would be? Honestly, don't know if there is one. I don't know what you could do, except maybe creating different police units, like I've mentioned before, maybe a civil guard that does lower level offenses and deals with fines and stuff. And then police, who are basically the same, but only deal with more serious issues. Ultimately, I'm not convinced that'll actually fix anything either. Now, what do you think the people of Chaz are saying? Do you think they're agreeing with these stories about the crime and the seriousness of them? Now, for the most part, they'll probably lie to you. They will, because they don't want the narrative that there's something wrong with their community. So on a macro sense, when you bring up these issues from the police, no, that's not happening. When journalists asked one of these guys, one of these Chaz guys, about extortion, the reporting was that people had gone to local businesses and said, you need to pay the Chaz a fee of like $500 to support the community. And they were like, I guess, because they know what happens if you don't. Smashy, smashy, right? Well, the activists denied it ever happened, saying, no, that never happened. Well, of course they're going to say that. Why would they admit it? What incentive do any of these people have to say, yes, we in fact are shaking down business owners to take money from them so that we can build up our little community? Side note, I do think it's funny that the police called it extortion. The libertarians were loving it because they were like, did the government just admit that taxation is theft? Yeah. Okay, there's a difference between taxation for a community where you have guaranteed civil rights and someone taking over your block and then demanding shakedown money. But I gotta admit, it's kind of a fine line. I do find it funny. Well, let's take a jump over to how the people of the Chaz are dealing with the fact that there are no police, there is no security, and there is nothing you can do to stop the criminals. Here's what someone posted to the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone Reddit page. PSA, lock and secure your tents before leaving it. Carry your valuables with you at all times. That is advice everyone should hear in any city anyway. Apparently, they were just trusting hippy-dippy, naive fools. Here's what they said. Disclaimer, this happened 2 hours ago, and I'm still recovering from the shock as all my valuables have been stolen. Came back from a walk to my tent, and all my valuable items were gone. My laptop, power banks, cash of $400, and entire bag packed with my week's supplies are now gone. I completely zipped up my tent before leaving it. But please don't take for granted and lock it up or bring your valuables with you. The surrounding people have been helpful to help look for it, but no luck so far. I've asked around and it's just too chaotic as people are constantly walking around tents all the time. Why, yes, let me one up this story for you. How would you like to have a hilarious story about theft in an occupation? During Occupy Wall Street, I did not have my backpack stolen. I did not have my money or my food stolen. You know why? Because I kept it with me the whole time. I wore my backpack and ain't nobody gonna touch it. But my tent got stolen. I kid you not. My tent with my name and everything on it in the park, stolen. I find that absolutely hilarious that they just took the whole thing outright. You know what they did with it? It was actually stolen by the organizers, who took it down and then gave it away to someone else. Welcome to socialism. Not fun, is it? I thought it was hilarious. Now, to be honest, I wasn't super involved with any of the organizing activities anyway. I was just down there doing my thing, filming, posting videos. They took it from me and I got mad and said, y'all stole my tent. And then I went and actually found the people who had it. And they were like, it's our tent. It was given to us by them. It was a donation. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. That's my tent. You can't prove it. You're right. I can't. What am I going to do? Go find the receipt from REI? Nope. There was no, they just took it. Now, what am I going to do? I had the tent set up, right? Well, that's what you get when there's no law enforcement, there's no police. And to be honest, if the police were there, they could maybe, like in the real world, maybe do a preliminary or like a minimal investigation where they go and ask the organizers, where'd you get it? And they'd say, oh, it was put up and we took it down. Is it pot? Okay, fine. Give it back to the guy, right? That's usually what may happen. But Occupy was lawless. You know, it was like, hey, man, I don't know where you got that. Nobody remembers. Nobody knows. Sorry, your tent is gone. I was talking to somebody giving out socialism books at Occupy Wall Street. And I explained this problem to them, that if you are a part of these groups and you go out and do your work, they give away your stuff. And by the time you're back, not only is your stuff gone, but now you can't get any of the donations because they've given them all away. So look at it this way. During Occupy, they had tents and blankets and everything, right? As soon as they opened up the little, what do they call it? Comfort, they called it. People would line up to get tents, blankets, or otherwise, or whatever else. Well, if you were working or doing something, then you weren't there to get a tent or a blanket. When they stole my tent, and I came back and they said they stole it, I said, well, then what am I supposed to do? And they said, I don't know. We don't have any tents for you. And I said, so I'm out filming protests and I'm posting videos on the internet, actually doing something. And the people who weren't working came here. You guys took my stuff, gave it to someone else, and now there's nothing left for me. So the people who literally do nothing get the advantage. Guess what I was told by someone giving out books on socialism? Well, maybe you need some way to prove things are yours. And I said, you mean like private property? Okay, well, yeah, but not really. I mean, private property is good. It's your tent. It's different from like a building. Like, oh, okay. And then how am I supposed to prove that I did something of value if they're giving away all the tents to whoever asks for it who aren't doing work? And I kid you not, they said, maybe they can give out some kind of trinket or token proving that you've done work so you can redeem it for supplies you need. And I went, you mean money? You just invented private property and money. Thank you very much. And boy, did they get angry. Yes. And how do you make sure that those rules are enforced? I'm waiting for it. Where is it? The police. That's right. It's not perfect. The cops can't do everything for everybody. And sometimes your stuff is just gone. But hey, man, the police can help with these issues. But you know what? It's not just about theft. Sometimes, what are you going to do? This person, tires slashed, now what? Yeah, man, when there's no cops, bad things happen, all right? This person wasn't in the autonomous zone. They were in West Capitol Hill, but they're still near it. And your tires got slashed, and I'm sorry to hear it. But guess what? These people have chased the police away. And now police are leaving. They're resigning en masse across the country. All of these stories you're hearing? Yeah, that's what you'll get when you have community policing. That's what you'll get when you disband your police. So please, be careful what you wish for. You might just get it. And I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 6 p.m. at youtube.com/TimCastNews. And I will see you all then.
In case you missed it, because you're a normal person out there living your life and you don't have time to riot in the streets, protesters with Black Lives Matter over the weekend projected a massive rainbow onto the Robert E. Lee Monument in Richmond, Virginia, in support of LGBTQ LMNO rights. Because as we all know, Lee was a Confederate general who led an infamous crusade against gays. Welcome to 2020, folks, where everything is made up and the facts don't matter. So after spending weeks watching looters and arsons burglarize and torch random stores while Antifa hippies take over entire city blocks in Seattle, if you're still wondering whether the mass protests that have rocked cities across the nation for the past 3 weeks were really about protecting black lives, here's another tidbit to add to the massive and growing pile of evidence that they're actually about a much larger radical left-wing agenda. Activists over the weekend projected a rainbow representing gay pride onto a massive statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. It's the largest of several monuments to Confederate leaders that stand on Monument Avenue in Richmond, Virginia, and its 40-foot granite pedestal had already been severely defaced with spray paint and signs reading, among other things, Black Lives Matter, Stop White Supremacy, and as always, F the Police. Because nothing says treat us with respect quite like scrawling profanity all over your own city streets. Now, vandalizing and destroying public property is not okay, but let's say, just for the sake of argument, that one could kinda understand when a movement that calls for racial equality targets a statue to a Confederate general. While it does not justify defacing a historical landmark, there's at least a linear connection between an anti-racism movement and a statue to a man who helped lead a war effort that was, in large part, to support the continued legalized slavery of blacks. It was what it was. And you might be able to make that association if that were what these protests were actually about. But you know, given that Robert E. Lee didn't lead a charge against gay rights, this doesn't track at all. Of course, these are the same morons who spray-painted a statue of Gandhi in D.C. and defaced a monument to Matthias Baldwin, one of the country's earliest abolitionists. Sorry, that's a big word. That means he didn't like slavery. But the fact that he was one of the first to argue for black voting rights a full 3 decades before the Civil War didn't stop ignorant vandals from spray-painting the word colonizer on his statue. Now, lest you assume that these incidents were just one-off occurrences by a few stupid apples, think again. Black Lives Matter managed to blur the boundaries of their own movement with yet another rash of protests this weekend, this time in support of black trans rights, a protest for the societal inclusion and protection of black Americans who've decided to identify as a gender other than the one they were born with. Thousands showed up in support of this effort, which has absolutely nothing to do with George Floyd or police brutality. But who cares? When a movement becomes an all-out war to fight the power, even if you can't intelligently articulate who the power is or what exactly you're fighting for. And therein lies the problem with the Black Lives Matter movement, and with pretty much any movement ever led by the left. It is not about black lives. Never has been. It's all a front for Marxism and their radical push to reshape America. It's not about weeding out bad cops. It's about abolishing the police and installing chaos where anyone can do anything with no consequences. Don't believe me? Here you go, straight from the New York Times. And isn't that just the way of it? Over and over and over again. What starts out as a cry for justice inevitably devolves into some bizarre pro-trans, anti-capitalism, go-green riot where looting and arson are acceptable responses to injustice and any unemployed 20-something with a cardboard sign is a hero. It's a crusade that somehow simultaneously demands big government solutions and total anarchy, where hippies take over entire city blocks in Seattle to set up their own autonomous city-state, and then demand that other people outside of it give them food and clothing for it. It's so intellectually inconsistent that it boggles the mind. If this movement were a piece of art, it'd be a kindergartner's finger painting. A blind cat walking across a keyboard could write a more coherent strategy than this. If you actually think that abolishing the police is a serious proposal, you are dumber than a sack of bananas and clearly not interested in finding actual solutions to any of these problems. If you think spray painting a city and turning it into a third world shantytown is suddenly a viable community just because you planted some basil in the middle of it, you shouldn't be trusted to lead a dog on a leash, let alone a national movement. If you think projecting a gay pride flag onto a statue to a Confederate general makes any sense at all, please, for the love of all that is holy, go pick up a history book. They make them for elementary school students. Maybe start there. And if you think that any of this, at any point, has had the tiniest bit to do with George Floyd, I've got some oceanfront property in Arkansas you might be interested in, because that is more believable than the claim that this has anything to do with justice. And that's your Reality Check America. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube page, like us on Facebook and Twitter, and stay sane out there.